I'm Dr. Mary Claire Haver, and my new podcast, Unpaused, is the place for bold, unfiltered conversations about what it takes for women to thrive in the second half of life. Listen to and follow Unpaused, available now wherever you get your podcasts.
It is Dukes and Bell Sports Radio 92.9 The Game, live at Flowery Branch. Mark Zeno hanging out with me. Mike is off. Pitchers up, a few of them at least, and Mike Bell, ATL. Make sure you follow him as he's going over for the game this Sunday. Remember, early start, guys, so get up, all right? We got the early start. We got the overseas game. It's Berlin. Our team will be done by like 12:30 on Sunday, which is good, especially if we're able to get a win. No, but
I was going to say, then the drinking can start.
Well, yeah, but a lot of people, I don't want you rolling out and, you know, oh, man, I thought the Falcons played and won. No, it's early game this weekend, and I think it's going to be a really good game, to be honest with you. Indy poses some challenges. We're going to talk to Rob about some of that stuff when he comes in here. And I also think that we pose some challenges for them. Their defense is not as stout as the Patriots' defense was. We should be able to run the football against these guys and do some other things. So I also just think, you know, we're in a situation where got to find a way to win. And I just don't care how it happens. Losing three in a row, that's a long trip back, Zeno. I've been saying this from Germany to back to the ATL, and you're on that plane for 10-plus hours or whatever it is, and you're like, we just lost four in a row? That's a real self-time to be, you know, self-examining situations. And I'd hate to be in that situation, but one of these two teams is going to be. Now, look, if Indy loses – they're still the first – they're the number one team in the AFC right now, all right? Mm-hmm. If you're not paying attention. We just played a team that has a chance to win the AFC in the Patriots, believe it or not. The Bills are certainly in the mix. The Chiefs, though, through nine games, nobody expected their record to be what it is. But for the Colts to lose, they still feel like they have a really good shot to win the AFC. I feel like that's why it's a must-win for us to kind of get out of this rut.
I mean, let me ask you this question. Just live in my world for a second of comparative spread analysis, right? The Falcons were close as a 4.5 or a 5-point underdog to New England,
right,
on the road in New England. If we agree that the Colts, I don't know if the Colts are as good as New England. Some people think they have a better record. I don't think they're as good as New England.
Okay,
but the idea that they are now a 6.5-point dog in a neutral site game to a Colts team that I don't think is as good as the Patriots team,
I don't either.
You know. If you believe in the comparing that stuff, and what does it tell you? I think the Falcons could actually keep this thing closer than people would think.
What's the over under in this game, by the way? 48.5.
Yeah.
Okay, 48.5. Just out of curiosity, yeah.
Under favors the Falcons.
Well, it does, yes. And I do,
because they don't score a lot, and if the defense keeps other people from scoring, I mean, that's just what the numbers tell you, right? I'm not saying they're not capable of scoring more. I'm telling you, to this point in the year, they haven't scored a lot of points in a lot of games. I mean, granted, they were shut out in one. That certainly hurts their average per game, right? If you take that one out, what do their numbers look like? That changes the game a little bit. But the point simply is that if you can keep Indianapolis from scoring a lot, you're going to be in a much better position, because that puts a lot less pressure on the Falcons' offense to have to score.
Yeah, and remember, the quickest way to the playoffs is winning your division. The Colts are 2-0 in their division. Patriots are 2-0, believe it or not, in the AFC East. Bills are not undefeated. Neither are, you know, is Miami. And the Jets and Miami don't have a chance to win that division. It's a wrap. So it's the Bills or Patriots. As far as the AFC South is concerned, Colts are 2-0. You got Jags at 1-0 in the division. Tennessee's 0-3. They're not going anywhere. And then Houston Texans. I don't know what happened to C.J. Stroud as far as if he's going to be back next week, but they're 1-1. Point is, Indy does have a path, whether it's winning the AFC outright or winning their division and getting to the playoffs. Right now, they're sitting in a really good spot. Meanwhile, we're not. I mean, we've already lost two division games. We brought this up, Day-Day. We talked about it. Mike and I have been talking about these division games. You lose to Tampa early on.
Lose to Carolina.
And then you lose to Carolina. So now you have to find a way to split if you feel like, hey, we might not be able to get to 10 wins. We got a lot of season left. But being 3-5 – maybe the best way is what Tampa did last year, and that's fine. You're going to need some help because they got some help from us. But win out, that means beat Tampa, sweep the Saints, beat Carolina, and that puts you potentially within reach to win the division.
Here's the thing. You know, after this Colts game, you got two division games against the Panthers and the Saints. You know, obviously, they both are must-wins, but you definitively have to beat the Saints in New Orleans, because the Week 18 game against the Saints – they might be fighting for the number one overall draft pick. If it's not locked up by then, they may want to make sure it's locked up by then. And with the Jets selling off everything but the kitchen sink yesterday, they might be telling you, hey, we're on the market for a number one draft pick as well. Yeah. So we don't want to have to trade away any assets for our number one pick. We want to keep the ones that we have. And, you know, that game may be a game where the Saints are laying down, so to speak. Even though it doesn't really happen, it happens. Except the Giants didn't do it last year. But that's neither here nor there. So the point simply is that winning that first one against the Saints, if you beat the Panthers, you beat the Saints, and, you know, you got a coin flip game against the Buccaneers. Is it impossible for them to finish 4-2 in the division? No, it's not.
Who's the best team in the NFC right now? Is it the Eagles?
Still the Eagles. In my opinion, still the Eagles.
It's not Tampa.
They're not healthy.
And they're still doing this.
They got so many. They're so banged up.
But that's the point. They're 6-2, and they're still in control of not only this division, but they are tied with the Eagles, tied with the Seattle Seahawks. They have a better record than the Packers. Like, I have a sense that it might be the Buccaneers. And I know that the Eagles, you know, again, they won without A.J. Brown last week, but they're so loaded and so, you know, they have so much depth. That's not a surprise. 404-726.
The Buccaneers lost to the Eagles, if that matters to you or not. Buccaneers, yes. Two losses to two of the best teams in the NFC, the Eagles and the Lions.
Well, remember, though, the Eagles game, and that was one of Baker's mistakes. They had the ball with a chance to go down and win. He throws an interception in that game. They were right there in that game. 404-726-0929. You guys can comment. Follow us, by the way, on social media. It's put them up. See Dukes. Go ahead, Zeno. Give out your social media, man.
It ain't complicated. Mark Zeno. MARKZINNO. Thank you.
And follow us at Dukes and Bell 929. And again, follow Mike at Mike
Bell. By the way, you're going to get a real flavor for what the Bucs really are in the next three games. Patriots, Bills, and Rams.
Okay.
Good luck.
Okay.
And the Patriots, I mean, the Bills and the Rams games are on the road.
I hope they lose all three, and I hope we win all three.
That would be quite epic.
Well, this is why the next stretch of games for us is
important. We're not at a point with this team where we could talk stretches. You got to win freaking Sunday.
No. Because you're on a stretch right now where you've lost three in a row. This next stretch of games, the next four, you got to find a way. Forget 2-2. You got to be 3-1 coming out of the next four.
Probably 4-0.
Well,
I mean, if you remember, we talked yesterday. They need to go 6-3 just to finish at 9-8, and that's no lock that you're going to get in the postseason.
Well, I just said the Eagles already have 6 wins.
Yeah,
the Bucs have 6 wins. You're talking about 2 more wins, and they're going to be at 8 wins already. 8 wins is not getting you in the playoffs. I don't believe that, especially with the way the wild card might play out. So, and again, we're just chopping it up from the standpoint of the importance of Colts, Panthers, Saints, Jets. You got to win all four of those. And it's not out of the realm of possibility.
No, it's not.
At all.
It's not. It's not at all. I mean, you know, the Colts probably present the toughest opponent in that stretch. But the overseas stuff is the ultimate equalizer for everybody. Has anybody in this team played on an overseas game? Our last one was 20.
Yeah, that's what was that when Mike? No, that was because Arthur Smith did not go, so that would have been.
It would have been the last year of Dan Quinn.
That's right.
Which was 2021.
2020, because I think 2020? Art got the job in 2020. Yeah.
Right. So I mean, none of these guys. I think Ra might have went over there with the Rams back in the day. But I don't recall, you know, I don't.
Well, let's ask him about that. Cause you're right. These games are different. I know, when you start talking about what's the best day to leave, is it early? Is it late? Some teams want to go super early, right? Get used to the time change. Cause that does screw you up a little bit. Get used to the environment a little bit. Other coaches are like, we'll go over and make it a short trip. This team is not leaving until today's one. They're leaving tomorrow.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, again, you lose a day going over. Basically, you got Friday, Saturday, and you're playing Sunday. I don't know. I mean, I don't know what the best answer is. Remember Aaron Rodgers? I think they went to Ireland, and we played a soundbite where Rodgers was like, I wish we would have got over here earlier. I don't know if there's a right answer as far as when you go over, but you're right about it being an equalizer.
You know what I can't wait for? The hot takes on the – well, your strength and conditioning coach clearly didn't have these guys ready.
All right, man. We are going to take a quick break. We'll come back. Ra's on the way. They are finishing up practice as they start preparations against the Colts.
How is that more important than this?
What's that?
Practice?
We talking about practice?
Practice?
Yeah, I know. I've said that to him. All right, we'll see what he has to say coming up. Stay there. It's Dukes and Bill live from the Ticketmaster Studios. It's Sports Radio 92.9 The Game.
I'm Dr. Mary Claire Haver, and my new podcast, Unpaused, is the place for bold, unfiltered conversations about what it takes for women to thrive in the second half of life. Listen to and follow Unpaused, available now wherever you get your podcasts.
It is Dukes and Bell. Mark Zeno in, hanging out with us here live at Flowery Branch, 404-726-0929. Raheem is coming, and I say that, you know, this makes
theoretically.
Me feel, look, this makes me
he
feel,
might have found out that I was here and decided to bail.
Well, that could be true. It makes me feel good, though, that they're running a little late because maybe they're working on some things that'll score some points.
That'd be nice. Get Bijan the ball.
I mean, I don't know.
Give Bijan the ball.
But maybe that's happening. Either way, he's set to join us here in just a few minutes, and I was hoping he'd walk in as soon as I said that comment, but he did not. What's on Day Day's mind is on the way. Wes Durham's going to join us as well, guys. Voice of our Atlanta Falcons coming up in the 4 o'clock hour. We'll rehash the college football playoff situation and what the committee was saying last night. It's the first rankings. Mark, and I'll be honest with you, I thought, as I said last night as we cleared our throat to end the show, I thought it would be a little bit crazier than what
I'm surprised presented. Ohio State is number one. Right? When I say Ohio State was number one, what's the first response you have? Like, I've heard the same response from a lot of people. Well, they're defending national champions. What does that have to do with this year?
Nothing.
Nothing. That's not a response that qualifies for any reason why they're number one. It has nothing to do with it.
Yeah.
Nothing.
Yeah.
So, I mean, Indiana has a better win than Ohio State, and so does A&M. So I was shocked. Like, I'm obviously dead wrong. I thought A&M would be at the top, would be the shocker. Really surprised they picked Ohio State.
Yeah, look, I thought they might just do Indiana just to really get everybody upset. But they stayed the course. This is the four teams we thought would be there. We just didn't know what the rankings would be.
Here's the thing, though. Like, usually the committee likes to shuffle the deck a little bit, you know, game after game. But right now, given their opponents the rest of the regular season, what's the reason you move Indiana above Ohio State? There's not a legitimate one.
No, but there doesn't have to be at this point.
What I'm saying is they've locked them in at 1 and 2 for the rest of these rankings until Ohio State plays Michigan.
Right, right.
Right? And if Ohio State wins that game, they're still number one. Indiana's still number two. But nothing is going to change for the next 5 weeks with those two.
No, the only team
– and I don't think we've ever seen that.
No, but the only team that could catch them is depending on what happens with Texas. Let's say Texas gets to the A&M game. They've beaten Georgia. They get to the A&M game at the end, and A&M wins. Does that push A&M enough, undefeated, with an SEC schedule they've just faced?
But if they're both if all three teams are undefeated, nothing changes.
You don't think they'll move one or the other?
What would be the justification for doing it?
Finishing the season. If Ohio State barely beats Michigan and A&M beats Texas handedly, look, it pains me to even say this. Okay?
I get it, but like, are we in the world where we're punishing teams for winning?
Yes,
that's ridiculous.
Of course,
for all you goofs out there who are so enamored with the loss column,
are you talking to the committee right now?
I'm talking to everybody who's enamored with the loss column, the way some of you guys are. Like, it's the ultimate decider of who is better than whom. Okay.
Well, that's why they play the games.
Okay, but Florida State is not better than Alabama. Nowhere ever. Period. Let's end that conversation.
They were that night.
Okay, but they're not a better team than Alabama. End of conversation. So you guys can be goofed off with this whole, oh, yeah, well, they beat them that day. It doesn't matter. They're not a better team. And the idea of this exercise of the college football playoff and the committee is to find the 12 best teams in the country. And so I don't see how you're going to punish Ohio State for barely beating Michigan when they've lost four in a row. Like, I don't live in that world.
Whoa, whoa, whoa. You just said the what happened last year doesn't matter.
You're right. It doesn't matter.
So the number one team? The number one team beats
the number one team should not be punished for winning a game.
Absolutely, they should.
No, that's ridiculous.
This is the game control that we talk about.
Because again, all you guys who are enamored with the loss column, you want to do that with the wins too, and it doesn't work that way. You can't grade out one win better than the other when two opponents play two different opponents. The Ohio State win over, Ohio State win over Michigan isn't better than the Indiana win over whoever it is in the last week of the season. They both won the game. If you're going to live and die by the loss column, you got to live and die by the win column as well. And if you didn't lose, you have no reason to be moved in the rankings. None.
I disagree. It's who you play, when you play them.
Then why doesn't it matter for the losses?
How you play in those
games.
Why
doesn't it matter for the losses?
And here's the most important part, Zeno. When you play them at the end of the season,
well, matters. The timing of a loss matters, yes.
Matters.
That I can understand. You know, you and I were talking about this in the break and worthy of bringing up. It's amazing how much Florida is a linchpin to a lot of this stuff. How do people grade Florida as a team? How does the committee grade? So Texas loses to Florida.
Yeah.
Right?
Yep.
Florida barely beats Georgia.
Did you say that purposely just to remind me, or you just wanted to make a point?
No, but I'm proving the point that, like, you know, Florida was good enough to beat Texas, but if they upset Ole Miss, for example, right, is that a bad enough loss for Ole Miss to lose? Because I don't think so.
It is.
But
Based on their record, it is.
But again, stop being enamored with the loss column. Watch the damn games. That's what matters. Florida is a very – they play the toughest schedule in the country, so they should have a lot of losses. They do it in the toughest conference in America, so it's understandable that they're going to lose some games. And look, it went sideways. Can't forget the South Florida loss by the Gators. That's understandable. But still, like, Florida is a tough, competent team. We saw that this weekend against Georgia. I mean, poorly coached, no doubt about it, and that's pretty much been the case all year. But still, they're a tough, competent team. I don't think you can hurt on Texas for losing to Florida. Well, Florida hung with A&M for 2.5 quarters.
Yeah, but Texas got beat, and they got beat up. I mean, that was a game where Florida dominated. But you're right. Let's talk about this for a second as we're here waiting on Ra to come in. They played LSU. That was a game where Lagway threw 5 interceptions. Was
including
it 5 interceptions?
A pick, yes, 5, including a pick 6 and only lost by 10.
All right.
A game they could have won.
They played a highly ranked Miami team at the time.
A game that they only gave up 13 points through 3.5 quarters to that team, and because their defense was on the field for 45 minutes
of that game.
No, I'm telling you the reality of what happened.
Okay.
That they were good enough to shut down the number 4 team in the country offensively.
Miami's not that good.
Back then they were.
But see, that's what I said about Florida State. You said it didn't matter. They're not Alabama. You can't have it both ways, you know? They beat Texas handedly. That was a Saturday
I'm not sitting here saying that Florida's a better team than Miami. You're telling me that Florida State was a better team than Alabama.
They were that night.
Okay, but they're not a better team. Miami is still a better team than Florida in every size, way, shape, or form.
Oh, they are?
Yes.
No, they're not. Not with Carson Beck at quarterback, they're not.
You ever seen DJ Lagway play a lot?
And then they played Texas A&M. They just lost to Georgia. We're talking about Florida's schedule, guys. And then in November, they have Mississippi, Ole Miss, actually, and then they got to go play Tennessee.
Mm-hmm.
What you're saying is we should look at the teams that played Florida how do you view those wins or losses?
Right, because they are a good measuring stick because they're a competent team. I mean, if Florida pulls off an upset of one of those two games,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
They get two teams that are ranked in the top 15, one of them ranked inside the top 10, right? Does that help Texas's case because – Florida's got a quality win against a legitimate opponent? I don't know the answer to that per se.
I don't know if it helps them.
I mean, if we're talking about strength of victory, Georgia's strength of victory over Florida wasn't very high. Like, literally, it came down to a very questionable call by the officials that decided that game. I only bring up strength of victory because that's what the committee told us they were adding into the conversation this year.
Robert says, I agree with Mark Zeno in regards to the college football playoffs. Yes, a hypothetical 3-loss Texas team should be in the final 12. I'm fine with it. I'm just telling you guys they haven't done a 3-loss team. And he says, after last season's Georgia Tech-Georgia game, it's very possible Georgia does win. Look, what was it, 8 overtimes last year for Georgia Tech? An incredible game. I don't know if we're going to get that at Mercedes-Benz Stadium, but I will tell you, if we do, it bodes well for both teams. Because what you're saying is this was an evenly matched game in which nobody dominated either opponent. And more importantly, I think it would help. Look, if you're going to tell me that Georgia or Georgia Tech wins in 3 or 4 overtimes over Georgia, that's what you're talking about, Zeno. That's not a bad loss. That's the difference between getting dominated. If Georgia beats Georgia Tech 38-3 after this amazing season mm-hmm. they've had and everybody goes, oh, see, they were a fraud. The committee says the same thing. And then you have no shot to get in. It is viewed differently when you look at these losses and how much you lose by.
The good part is a lot of the stuff's going to be worked out over the next 3 weeks, and this conversation is going to be mute. But I love having it.
It's a great conversation. Speaking of great conversations.
What is he doing?
Speaking of great conversations, Coach Rod just walked in. I will repeat what he said because Zeno said exactly what you just said to me. He says he doesn't know I'm going to be on with you, and he said, I can't wait to see his reaction. And Coach Rogers walked in and said, what is he doing here?
Oh, man, you know, you got to get ready for Zen. You know, like, he's one of those guys you got to get ready for, prepare yourself. You walk in, you see him. He brings a certain amount of excitement, a certain amount of joy, but I also need to text my stats people, make sure we get right.
For a certain amount of joy. Geez, that wasn't – it's not a word they associate with me often, but I thank you for that, Coach.
You do. I appreciate you guys. I don't villainize you.
All right, look.
I don't villainize anybody.
Well, you can't now with him.
No, not at all.
That you were saying to me yesterday, I asked Raw. You should have heard him yesterday on the show. He's in for Mike this week.
He did. He's a truth teller. He's the hard question guy.
Okay.
But you know, you know, you just speak to it in an open, honest communication.
Well, yesterday he was at – you know, when I asked Raw, I said, did you ask Raw?
Yeah.
And he kept saying it.
I kind of slipped because I just was reiterating that, you know. We had a nice little one-on-one on Monday.
We did. Everybody was still on the flight.
Still on the flight back, so you and I got to spend some quality time together, which I truly enjoy. But I kept saying, well, you know, I actually asked Ra that, and he had to make a big deal about it.
Of course I did. So. All right, let's talk some business here. Coach, appreciate the time. Speaking of trips, I want to start there before we get into injuries and Indy and all this stuff. How many times have you been overseas with this kind of game as a coach?
Three.
You've been to three of these kinds of games.
I think two in London, and it's my first one. Going to be my third going to Germany.
Okay. What's different about them? First and foremost, Zeno and I were talking about, you know, when you leave and do all this kind of stuff, and does it matter, the approach to these games? What's been your experience?
I have both. You know, I've done the week. You know, you go out there, and you did a whole week down there, and kind of you go through the process, you get acclimated. But this was back when it was a mandatory bye after.
Right.
Big difference.
Know? I've done the three-day trip, basically what we're doing again. You go on the Thursday, you get down there, and you kind of get there. It was to London, so it was a little shorter flight, so a little bit different in those aspects. You know, all the science people, you want to go spend the least amount of time as you can, you know, because there is no acclimation. And you don't want to get acclimated, especially when you're coming back to get involved and play.
And we don't have a bye week, guys, by the way.
Right.
We come back.
Right back into your schedule, so it's not like you want to go down and get acclimated to have to reacclimate when you come back. You know, all those things matter, so like – we got a lot of smart people here, a lot of guys, like, put a lot of time into what's the best times, where do you want to go, how do you go. And then, obviously, there's some compromises met based on the things you got to do and the obligations that you have. And we did all those things. And, like, we're educating our players, you know, talking about hydration, obviously, is a big part of it when you're flying over there. You talk about the sleep schedule and how it should look when you get over there. You talk about trying to keep them up when you do land to get them involved with a couple of things. You don't want them to go right to sleep to not be able to have a little bit of a great feel of it or a good night's sleep and things of that nature. So there's a lot of things that go into it. We had a really detailed meeting today to just kind of preview those guys on what they can expect so you kind of know, you know, how you – it's a lot of different moving parts to the travel.
Is there any nuance to the actual building and the stadium and the warm-up procedure, not having been there before, not knowing what it looks like or anything like that? Does that even matter?
Zen, it's 100% a bench part of that. How many times have we seen people go over there and slide over the field for the first half, go inside and change to the studs?
Right.
Right? So you go over there, you know, Joey has done such a great job of educating us on, you know, mandatory studs, what we're wearing, how we're wearing it,
equipment
what
manager?
We're doing. Yes, our equipment manager, Joey.
Okay.
And doing all those things. So that's another part of it, like especially – and the environment, you know. It was funny. You mentioned it, that Mike actually brought that up today. What's the environment like in the stadium? You know, are we going to be on the silent? You know, is it not going to be in the silent? And little things like that, just kind of things you got to think about. And I was really proud of him for even asking that, like what the environment is. Anybody played over there, kind of asking the building. I said, I have. So it's got a little soccer fields, a bunch of cheering going on. It is loud. It is exciting. It's only a bunch of different jerseys in there, and because really it's NFL football fans, right? And, you know, obviously we always have a great following with Atlanta fans, but there's going to be different people, walks of life everywhere over there. It's going to be a different feel for you in the stadium when you go to play. And not to mention the tradition dealing with that stadium, right? I mean, Jesse Owens, you know, that's a big part of our history, what we learned growing up in school and things of that nature, you know, versus Hitler, other stuff that we do know about it. And, like, that's definitely something special when you walk into that environment to get a feel for that. And, you know, Charlie Warner, our tight end, mentioned to me, it's going to be pretty cool. No, actually, it was Chris Lynch mentioned, pretty cool playing with, you know, a track around the field again, like high school.
Oh, yeah. That's true. Yeah.
Things you don't even think about, right?
Takes you back. Then the stadium, by the way, guys, obviously has been redone, remodeled, but the historic stadium that Coach is talking about.
Have you been over there?
Yes. Yes.
Have you? Where'd you go?
I was born overseas.
That is outstanding.
Yeah. So I spent
a lot of time. Why should I ask you? Why weren't you a part of our program?
I spent a lot of time over there as a kid. But, yes, and it's incredible, like the sights and stuff. Mike's over there. He's waiting on you guys to get – that's where he is. He's over there waiting for the game this Sunday. But – to Coach's point, like the historic stuff, if you're going over as a Falcon fan, take all of that in, man. It's really cool to experience that. Yes, you're going to the game, and our team won't, you know, we want our team to win, but that stuff is like once in a lifetime stuff.
Don't you kind of make that a secondary thing? We want our team to win.
No, I'm saying, no.
First and foremost. Definitely take in the historic
stuff. Got to do it.
All right, you got to
reverse that? You want me to reverse that?
Please.
All right, let's talk about this team. And first of all, Coach, trade deadline yesterday. No trades for our team. Were you in the market to make a move?
Nothing serious enough that made it close to my desk. You know, like Terry handles a lot of that stuff. I mean, obviously there's always calls received. There's always calls that go out. There's calls that go in about different people, different players, all that stuff. But nothing got to a point that it made it down to us in the football. We were in the mode of preparing, getting ready for you know, obviously they ended up as Colts and go out here and try to get a win, but nothing that got serious that came down the hallway.
I mean, at 3-5, obviously everything feels like a must-win at this point.
Oh, yeah.
Do the players sense that level of pressure at this point?
I don't know if it's pressure. I just think it's like a must-needed. It's a kind of an urgency. It's a joyful urgency, I can tell you that much. These guys want to get at it. They want to play. They want to go out there and do it the right way. And you can tell how they played last week, and you got to take that into this week, and you got to go finish it. You got to go finish those deals, but it's definitely an urgency.
Hi, I'm Dr. Mary Claire Haver, a board-certified OBGYN and menopause specialist. My new podcast, Unpaused, is the place for bold, unfiltered conversations about what it really takes for women to thrive in the second half of life. Every week, I sit down with medical experts, cultural icons, and powerhouse women to talk about what really matters: your health, your power, and your future. We're covering hormones, identity, finances, relationships, and so much more. New episodes drop every Tuesday. Listen to and follow Unpaused with me, Dr. Mary Claire Haver, available now wherever you get your podcasts.
What is not must win in this league, really, when you think about it now? But like, you just get to that point when you get to the 3-5 record. You got to go. And it's time to start up, Zeno.
We were talking yesterday. Sorry, Duke.
No, go for it.
I mean, you know, I tried, and I didn't say this to you on Monday, but there was a lot of positive that came out of Sunday. I know it doesn't fit, like, moral victories, blah, right, whatever.
Well, we argued about this. I want to be clear.
We did argue about it. Because, like, again, you know, I just look at it, and I'm like, there was a lot of things that went right. And it's very tough to pinpoint a loss on one particular thing, although, you know, fans and people in the media will do that. But I felt better about the way you played overall as a whole than at some other points in the season. I know the loss doesn't make anybody feel any better, but there was some good that came out of this whole thing.
Yeah, Zeno, you know, I'm sorry I'm not here to ride your emotional roller coaster with you. You know, but you can take positives out of all of those things, you know. Obviously, and
it's unfair.
It's not. It's just you just can't think that way, right?
Right.
Like you know, when you have injuries, you know, like when you talk about them, it's just making excuses, and like I refuse to do that. Like when people don't play, that it doesn't matter. Like people got injuries all across the league, and your job is to go out there and win. Like we're in the business of winning. And we got to go do that. And, like, until we get that done, it's just your job is not done. There are definitely positives you take out of every game that you play. Like, you know, like Kobe Bryant lived by, man. You learn from every time you go out there on the grass. And, like, you do. You really do. And everything that you got going on. So, like, there were some positives. And I thought the biggest thing that came out of last week was the resiliency. Because, like, we talked about we play better when we start fast. And we did not start fast, right? Mm-hmm. We didn't start fast on offense. We didn't start fast on defense. We didn't start fast anywhere. But the resiliency from the guys to stick around and the young dudes to find a way to make a play at the end of that half to get us right back in it, to go in at halftime to be able to make some adjustments, come back out and watch those guys play and just fall short at the end, is heartbreaking. But at the same time, those are the positive things that you kind of allude to.
Coach,
I kind of like Kevin Zeno on the radio.
See,
I feel like
go.
I could be more personable with him.
Well, that's
radio.
Fine. Keep coming. Keep it coming because he keeps telling me, you know, I asked Raw.
Shut up.
Let me
starting
ask
to annoy
you.
Me, you know that?
Let me ask you. You started this. Flaws, mistakes, Coach. The flaws and mistakes that have hurt our team. I will say it's attention to detail. But you, what are you preaching? Because when you watch these games, and you guys go back and watch them, and it's the little things, right? I mean, the Michael Penix play last week, we've diagnosed it. We've talked about it. We know how it played out.
Which play are we talking about here?
The intentional grounding, obviously.
Yeah, yeah.
That hurt us, you know, 10 yards, fourth and 20. We got to kick that thing.
You have to. Like,
you
got to
kick it.
You know, like, if anything less than that, then you're not kicking it.
Correct.
Then, you know, because Zeno's going to be yelling at me on Monday.
So, but those mistakes and those flaws, that's one thing Falcon fans are wondering. Like, what are you preaching week to week to help us get better in those areas? Because that feels like those are the things that are holding us back.
Yeah, you know, just got to – the individual things when you're talking about. And that one right there was not like a Michael Penix full-blown error, mm-hmm. right? We're talking about, you know, an inadvertent snap that comes when it's not supposed to come. You know, nobody's ready to block anybody, and you're trying to get the ball out to, you know, to Kyle Pitts' feet, you know, and you don't get enough on it. There's people right in your face. And all those things happen. You get intentional grounded. But you can lump those things to the same one with the intentional ground that we had at the end of the half a couple weeks ago where you don't get it towards close enough to your guys down the field when you're trying to throw a shot at the end zone in one of those ozone situations. So kind of different situations, but you just kind of detail those things up. And your quarterback, which everybody should be fortunate enough to think is sharp enough, good enough, aware enough to know exactly what he needs to do in all those situations, and he'll get those things done. There are going to be some growing pains. There's always going to be obvious. But those are always teachable moments and the things that you get a chance to teach when you're in practice. And, you know, don't make the same mistake twice. And, you know, he hasn't done that. He's come up with a couple new ones. And there's been a couple other guys in the field that's come with a couple new guys. But we got to stop all of them. And we got to find a way to go out there and get a win.
How did you end up on Zane? I mean, obviously you move on from John Parker Romo. And we're on now kicker number three this year.
This has been a kind of a long thing going, right? You know, we went to the offseason. And really, you kind of were hoping that the injury thing with Koo would kind of go away and really give you that strength and that power and stuff that you can come back with. And you came back, had a great offseason. But as you know, when it comes to this kicking thing, like I talked to you about, I don't know if it was in private or on press conference, you know, this kicker thing is dedicated when it's on the field, on the grass, in those moments, you know, kicking a game winner, kicking a field goal in front of 60,000, whatever the case may be, with people cheering and everybody watching. It's like a golf shot, right? I can hit the tee box when you're not there. Mm-hmm. But when everybody gets there, it's a different deal, right? So, like, that's when those things are found out. So when we had to make that move and go out, then we start to work out these kicks, and you start that brutal cycle that you have to go through. You end up working out all these guys. So you end up knowing them all, whether it's Romo, whether it's Zane, you know, whether it's Sauls, whatever the case, Lenny Craig, all these guys, right? And then even the other guys that's been able to come in here and work out. And as you go, you know Zane was one of the guys on your hot list because he's a veteran. He's done it. He's been in those moments. You pick Romo because he was a younger guy and had a powerful leg and had some strength behind it. He came in, had a really strong game. Then he had a game that didn't go so well. We kind of went for a while until we ultimately missed the kick yesterday. So now you got to go out and try to get some experience in Zane. And somebody has done it last year with a wealth of experience going out in San Fran, had a little bit out in Washington. You know, obviously getting him in here, you know, confident guy. I've heard about this twitch. I haven't seen it. But, you know, like to see him go out there and kind of make the kicks and get it done. You know, but you got to search and you got to find operational piece, and that's what we got to find with that.
I don't know how you didn't lose your cool last week. I
spent a lot of time working on that. I'm glad you asked.
Because –
You know how?
Because I have no idea.
Because how we grew up. You know, like I grew up around my pops, and where he would absolutely lose his mind and worry about things that were unnecessary. And instead of trying to fix it and be a proactive person trying to fix it when you go about that moment. So, like, in those moments, that's why I can remain the calmest.
Coach, that was necessary.
I've already thought about those.
That was necessary.
It definitely was. But, like, if you lose your cool in that moment, you don't give you a chance to have a chance to go out there and try to find a way to win, right? The thing that had to happen was the defense had to go out and get a stop.
And they did.
They had to make them punt, and they did.
Yep.
We got them to punt, and then you get the ball, and you got to go down and move the ball. We got knocked off two really good runs, got a nice scramble play out to Drake, and then disaster strike with an offside, disaster strike with intentional grounding, and now you're in a bad spot. But I feel like you'll miss some of those moments if you worry about the things that you can't control at that moment.
Okay, wait, I got to ask.
Go ahead.
So we can expect you to be that in those – because that was an emotional moment. Like,
yeah,
for us, like as fans, we're like, all right, we need this. It doesn't happen.
Yeah,
You probably heard the roar from Atlanta, but you're saying I gotta be right here.
Yeah, I'm gonna be there regardless.
Okay.
I've been the biggest game, biggest moments of my career. I've been there, Super Bowls, whatever it's been. I'm gonna be there because I got to be that steadying force for everybody. Like they're emotional moments, but you got to do a lot of practice. It requires a lot of detail, a lot of things in your life to be able to work on those things to make sure you can remain structured and sound so you can give good sound decision making and make all those things for us. You know, not just for me. For everybody out there.
I want to ask you about the injuries. It feels like we have a lot, coaches. Dukes and Bell, guys. Zeno's in for Mike today. Coach Ross with us. We're getting ready for Indy overseas in Berlin on Sunday. Get up early. Remember, we're the early game on Sunday. I don't even know where to start. I mean, offensive line, first and foremost. What about our two guards? What's the situation?
We got, you know, obviously, Big Bird. You know, he'll be week to week, like I told these guys today. You know, so he'll miss this week. Like we'll probably announce that tomorrow and do some of those different things. I know David's probably mad at me right now because we didn't put it out.
This is for. This is your show.
Hold on a second. It's funny you said that because I said to him, I go, when you said earlier to me that week to week, just say he's out. You're telling us he's out. Just say it. What are we doing?
Listen, you know, I keep the drama for you guys. Like, Zeno,
you guys treat injury information like we're moving troops covertly through foreign lands.
So, Zeno, the reason you don't, because you've seen stranger moments.
That's true.
Right? You've seen a guy come in and say, I'm playing. Mm. And then depending on who that guy is, you let him play. Right? You know, obviously, there goes in other situations where you got guys you're going to protect, like a Michael Penix. Mm-hmm. Right? And you're not playing. You know, so like just an example, but like so you kind of keep those things under wraps until you see your players, you get them a chance to get out there, see what's going to happen, what's going to happen with the change. You know the history, and I try to give you the answer to the test without giving it to you. When I say week to week, I mean, I'm not expecting it, but I don't know what's going to happen. Like, I don't know the miracle of medicine, some of these different
things.
Real quick,
does any of that have to do with the fact that it's overseas and the fact that there's a lot of unknowns? I mean, if it was a home game, would that have changed his week-to-week status or no?
No.
Okay.
No, I don't think so. Then obviously Chris. You know, Chris came out at the end of the game, and, I expect him to get going tomorrow. Some things we're going to have in practice, and I expect him to get going Friday. So that's why I say he's day-to-day, because, like, he looks way more likely to be able to go, and obviously he'll be traveling with us and some of those things, so you'll see some of that stuff. So,
are we looking at Stuber and potentially Hinton, Coach?
So Hinton obviously would be the guy to fill in first and foremost at the guard position, you know. But we have a bunch of different options. Obviously, we have Gwinny that can move from our center position and go play some guard for us. And then picking up Stuber was nice because you get some familiarity with a guy that's been around here before, that's going through an offseason with us, going through a training camp with us. Obviously, made our practice squad, was poached. And now has the ability to come back. So that is a little bit of luck, a little bit of value. Some of the things that you can bring out, obviously, with Stuber.
Real quick, Bass, mm-hmm. I know we got to go. It's Coach Ra. We got to ask you about Indy. But what's up, Zeno?
Real quick, because now I'm going to be annoying. So as far as Bijan is concerned, and
yes.
Look, I understand what the game plans was last week, and, you know, we weren't going to run right into the teeth of the defense. I get that. But in the beginning of the year, you guys were dominating time possession because you were able to actually run the ball.
That's right.
Is there a sense that we have to get back to the effectiveness of the actual run game, not just putting the ball in Bijan's hands, the actual run game?
I don't know why you said it's a pain in the neck. That is absolutely – that's like a statement.
Okay.
Right? You might as well just come on a coaching staff and make it a statement.
Oh, like, my goodness. His head is big enough, Ron.
No. Because, like when you say these things in a press conference setting – you said in the press conference setting, right, it could be like I disagree with them.
Right, yes. Right. Okay, I get it.
No, you know, like you want to go out there and really be able to control the clock, like we talked about from Phil's standpoint. But, like, you know, carrying it with Bijan, carrying it with Tyler, it's what you want to do, right? That opens up everything else down the field. That opens up our team. That's why I called our front line, our lifeline, right? No matter what we're doing, we need that thing to work. And, like, I'm not talking about just the starters. I'm talking about all of them and everything, all hands on deck. And, like, I'm just super honest probably with you guys on, like, that Patriot team is a tough team to run on.
And sure.
You go look at your loser stats, and you tell me who's run on them and who's had a lot of success. But what you got to be and what you try to be is efficient, right? And averaging 4.4 with not enough attempts is what you want to try to get to. But how do you get to attempts? I'm trying to be honest with you, we got to play better on third down. We didn't play well enough on third down last week. And if we can find a way to play better on third down, then you can wrap up a couple more attempts and really get that thing cranking where you want it. And it'd never be like, hey, we just ran for 200 yards. And no, that ain't going to happen. You're going to go out there, you're going to run efficient and effective, you know, kind of like San Fran did to us, right? It was 40 attempts for the 3-point-something average.
Consistent, yep.
And it's like you feel just miserable coming out of the game. Then you look at it like, oh, you know, just it was the attempts. It was the production on third down. It was being able to move the chains. It was being able to the time of possession. It was playing the brand of ball. When we play well, that's what we look like.
All right, last thing.
I don't know why you said that was hard.
Well, he wanted to jump in there. He was relentless on this. Colts, they are currently the number one seed in the AFC. Doesn't matter to us. But Lou Anarumo, you know Lou.
Yes.
DC, he was there in Cincinnati for a long time. He's taken this defense from 24 to 7th. I don't think they're as good as the Patriots, in my opinion. But, Coach, what do we have to do, speaking of the run game and offensively?
What kind of guy gives his opinion on another man's defense?
Because it's not as good. It's just not as good. What do we have to do with the offense to be successful against this Colts defense on Sunday?
We kind of just talked about it, right? We got to go out there and do what we do, right? What is the best version of us? The best version that we've seen of us is being able to run the football, you know, operating, getting down the field, being able to throw some of my passes down the field to Drake, then they'll get it opened up to Mooney.
Now, what you say, Drake, they got Sauce now. Does that – mean anything?
Sauce is a very good player, you know, and like we love Sauce, but like Drake is a very good player, right? Everybody has a good player.
Are they just going to go Sauce follow five everywhere? Is it going to be that simple?
It's kind of weird because the Patriots didn't do that till Drake showed up with Gonzalez,
right?
And then Drake showed up and Gonzalez followed him everywhere, and you know,
Gonzalez left the game in pain.
I'm not gonna brag about that. I like my matchup with five. I mean, just my barnyard bully, right? Like, he's not going to back down from the challenge. I'm not going to say he's going to win every single one, but he's not going to be afraid of it. And that's what I love about him. That's the type of stuff. And, you know, Sauce is a dog. So, like, I look forward to those guys getting together and having a nice little matchup if that presents itself.
If it presents itself. All
right. But we got to do the things that make us good.
Okay. Look, because that's where everybody's concerned. The offense, you know, everybody's focused on the offense. They want to know about the offense. And can we do what we did last week? Guys, we went 3-for-3 in the red zone last week. We got to score more points. Mm-hmm. Coach.
And there's stuff, right, we're talking about. There's things. I think I said to him last week, we got to get better in the red zone. And we did.
We did.
And then you got to get everything going and clicking. And then if you can get that done, that's how you find a way to get a win.
All right, Coach, we got to let you go because Bass is fussing.
Thank you
so much. Have fun. Good luck. That is Coach Raheem Morris. All right, guys, we're coming back. We're live at Flyer Branches, Dukes and Bell.
I'm Dr. Mary Claire Haver. Ready for honest conversations about thriving in midlife? Listen to and follow my new podcast, Unpaused, available now wherever you get your podcasts.